He enjoys problem solving. He enjoys coming in between two people who are having difficulty and working it out. And there are pastimes in the 10th canto where he does this. He really enjoys it. Lord Balaram is a very sporty person. He loves a game. He loves a competition. But mainly, he loves glorifying Krishna. He just loves glorifying Krishna. That is his heart and soul. Yeah. They're also performed in Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah. Two ways of seeing it. One is there are different areas where he's in different ages. One is that different people see him at the same time as being in different ages. That version is given in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That Krishna was out at night having the rasa dance as a teenage boy. But he just came scrambling in and got into bed just about half an hour before it was time to get up. So Mother Yashoda came to wake him up. She was trying to wake him. He couldn't wake up. And Mother Yashoda sees him as her little boy and thinks, oh my poor little boy, he's so tired from herding the cows yesterday. He was working so hard. Then she sees the kumkum from the gopis is on his body. And she thinks, oh, it's some red oxides from Govardhan Hill. He went to catch one calf which strayed on Govardhan Hill. Maybe he fell and some red powder from the ground got on his body. And the scratches from the fingernails of the gopis, she thinks, ah, these are cuts from thorns. So she sees him as her child. And she breastfeeds him even at that point. But actually at the same time, he's having his conjugal pastimes. So, it's like that. Oh yes, everything's there. It's all very flexible to help Krishna in his pastimes. Yeah, it's very flexible. Like Narada Muni, that was in Dwaraka, of course, but the same principle applies. He went to see Krishna in the 16,108 palaces. He went into one, it was morning. Immediately went next door, it was night. Then he went next door, a few minutes later, it was lunchtime. So time is very flexible. And it's simply a background for Krishna's pastimes. Yeah. Every night is a full moon night. In Goloka Vrindavan, yeah. There's nothing other than full moons. So it's very flexible. And like here, they had the first rasa dance down at Vamsivat, and they thought, the gopis thought, that the night had been shortened to about 5 minutes. But actually it had been lengthened to the length of a night of Lord Brahma. 4 billion years. So time is very flexible. And it basically just provides like a background or a scenario sort of context for the pastimes to take place in. Yeah, it's not that time is dominating. If it appears to dominate, it's just to enhance a pastime. Yeah. I think, anyway, we can take more questions perhaps tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Please mark yourselves present as usual. Today we're going to discuss text 3, And I did mention right at the beginning, those of you who are here would remember perhaps, that around this part, for the next few verses, it really does get a little technical. And in this regard, we are going to give out some... Let me just see here. Here we are. We're going to give out these sheets here. And you may well wonder what this is all about, but we will explain shortly. There is mantra. We all know about that. There is tantra. Like deity worship is a tantric process. And then there is yantra. Prakritya purushena cha. Premananda Mahananda Rasena Vastitam Hiyat Jyoti Rupena Manuna Kama Bijena Sangatam. Translation. The well of that transcendental lotus is the realm wherein dwells Krishna. It is a hexagonal figure, the abode of the indwelling, predominated and predominating aspect of the Absolute. Like a diamond, the central supporting figure of self-luminous Krishna stands as the transcendental source of all potencies. The holy name, consisting of 18 transcendental letters, is manifested in a hexagonal figure with sixfold divisions. How many of you read this over last night? I should have mentioned, I know, but it was the homework. Anyway, let me just mention now that the homework for tonight is to read verses 4 and 5, okay? So make a point of doing that. Now, of those of you who read through, were you able to follow it all? And be understood in terms of being like a lotus. And there are petals, of course, many petals actually. I think it said 1,000. Thousands. Lots and lots of petals. Actually, it's unlimited, really. The significance of the petals will be explained, I think, in the next verse. Verse 4. Yeah. Verse 4 talks about the petals. Mainly at this point, we are concerned about the whirl, which means the very center, inside the petals. You know, normally in a flower, in many flowers, there are the petals, but inside, right in the center, there's some sort of central area, if you know what I mean. So, now, in this case, in text 3, the understanding is that Krishna, in Gokula, when we're looking on Gokula as being in the form of a lotus, then Krishna resides in the world, in that central area from which the petals are coming out, but not on the petals, in that central area, normally where they call them stamens or something like that in botanical terms, I think, those inner parts of the flower are. So Krishna's there. Now, this world, according to the verse, this world is not actually circular. It's hexagonal. Hexagonal means it has six sides. Yeah. So it's a hexagonal, six-sided world, central part, from which the petals are coming out on all sides. And then the verse goes on to say that actually not only is Krishna there, but there is the predominated and predominating aspect of the Absolute. Of course, Krishna is the predominating Absolute, and or part of the Absolute, and the predominated is Radharani. So in fact, in that hexagonal whirl, central part of the lotus of Gokula, we find Radha and Krishna. And particularly though, according to the verse, particularly Krishna stands out there as supporting everything. He's even supporting Radharani, actually. She is his pleasure potency. She is part of his nature. So ultimately, he is supporting everything there in the center. Then, slightly mysterious statement at the end of the translation, but anyway, it all comes out as we go through the purport. The holy name, a particular form of the holy name, which consists of 18 transcendental letters, is there also in a hexagonal shape. So we won't explain right now what that is about, but shortly we'll come to that, and that's when we're going to refer to the yantra. But anyway, let us just say that for the time being. In other words, this holy name or mantra, this mantra, the holy name, is also there in a hexagonal form, which happens to be the same form as the whirl of the lotus, six-sided. Okay? In other words, the mantra is physically structured with the words on six sides. I know this is all a little unusual, but don't worry. When we come to it, I think it will be relatively understandable. Although, do bear in mind, as I've mentioned, this is the most difficult part, I think, practically of any of our BBT books. And if you survive today and tomorrow, you can survive anything, I think, in terms of Krishna conscious philosophy. I mean, in the sense of its profundity and sometimes its esoteric nature. Okay, so that is a sort of translation of the translation. Now let us go through the purport. So the purport, first of all, on page 7, is talking about two types of pastimes of Krishna's, manifest and non-manifest. First of all, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta explains that when Krishna is personally present, as he was 5,000 years ago, or Lord Chaitanya was 500 years ago, and they were performing their pastimes and everyone could see them, the devotees could see them, even the demons could see them, and everyone could see them. So those pastimes are called the manifest pastimes. Now, he goes on then in third sentence of the purport, starting the end of the fourth line. The pastimes which go on in Goloka, they're called non-manifest. Here, of course, he's talking in terms of us. To us, they're non-manifest. It's not the second type of non-manifest pastime. That is the pastimes of Krishna which go on in Gokula. Bear in mind the distinction we're making between Goloka and Gokula, as of yesterday. Goloka means in the kingdom of God, We are now, though, in Gokula. So when Krishna is not performing his pastimes, I mean, when he is not present on the planet as he was 5,000 years ago, or as Lord Chaitanya was in Navadvip 500 years ago. So at any other time, other than those times, actually Krishna is still present. And yesterday, well, we mentioned Gopa Kumar, you recall. He goes up and down, between Goloka and Gokula, and he sees the two of them as being the same, and that certainly means he definitely sees Krishna in both of them, because Krishna is the sum and substance, and all the devotees, and, you know, like Prabodhananda Saraswati said, he sees the leaves as emeralds and the fruits as rubies and the mountains as being made of jewels and so on. Yeah. So, but for us, people like us, just as we cannot see Goloka, so we cannot see how today, right now, at 4:15 in the afternoon of the 27th, is it? All right. Of September 1998, Krishna is everywhere here, and the cows and the cowherd boys. But we can't see them. So from our point of view, they're called non-manifest, those pastimes which are going on today. So there's one type then of manifest pastime. That's when Krishna is personally present, as he was 5,000 years ago. And two types of non-manifest pastimes, those of Goloka and those in Gokula, when Krishna is not personally present in that sense, as he was 5,000 years ago. Interesting point. The pastimes are going on. They're not manifest to us. Yeah. Yeah. I see. Are there different types of pastimes? Different in Goloka, different from Gokula? No. Because Gokula is the same. It's an extension. There is a difference, though, between the pastimes that Krishna performs here. Let me put it this way. Jiva Goswami explains that when Krishna is manifest here, then all the incarnations, Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, Lord Nrisimhadev, and everyone else, they're all present in Krishna when he's actually present, so to speak, before our eyes. But when Krishna leaves this Vrindavan, he stays in that non-manifest form. But that non-manifest form is only Krishna. It doesn't include all the incarnations. That's an interesting point. And then Krishna doesn't kill the demons when he's unmanifest, non-manifest. Yeah. So basically the Goloka pastimes and the non-manifest Gokula pastimes are the same, because Gokula is an extension of Goloka, and there's no difference. They're not really two different places. But when Krishna performs his manifest pastimes, there are the various differences that we mentioned yesterday, which are all in terms of how he's manifest, and sort of, so to speak, interacting to some extent with the external realm, including the demons. Now, you know, I understand. I think it's just a matter, I mean, you know, to me it appears to be a matter of achintya bheda bheda tattva. Yeah, they're one and different. The only difference is their location, but you can look at it from the Gokula angle looking at Goloka, or you can take it from the Goloka angle looking into Gokula, because you see in the next sentence he says, so Goloka is the self-same majestic manifestation of Gokula. Yeah. As far as I can make out, it's just like, you can look at it from either perspective, from Gokula into Goloka, from Goloka into Gokula, and you could take one as being the extension of the other, or the other as being the extension of the one. In other words, there's no real difference. It's not that you have to look from Goloka into Gokula, in other words. Yeah, there's actually no difference. You know, if we insist on saying Gokula is an extension, then it implies that it's kind of a little less. But it's not less. It's actually the same. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's in the Adilila somewhere, it says that they are not two different bodies. They're the same body. Yeah. Now, the manifest pastimes, that means when Krishna's present, the manifest pastimes can only be approached. One can only enter into the manifested pastimes when Krishna is personally present. You get the idea? You cannot enter into them unless they're happening. And unfortunately, that already happened in this day of Brahma. So, you know, you'd have to wait. If you wanted to, you know, just in any condition, whatever your condition was, be able to see Krishna's pastimes in the manifest form, you'd have to wait until he performs them again within this universe, which will be in the next day of Brahma. So the manifest pastimes can only be approached when Krishna is present. However, the non-manifest pastimes can be approached and entered into even today, on this very day today. So, going down page 7 to about, it's about two-thirds of the way down, he says, the manifestations of the non-manifestive pastimes of Krishna with regard to the conditioned souls, that's us, are twofold. So there are two methods, and actually they're on two different levels for approaching and entering into the non-manifest pastimes. In other words, you can see Krishna here in Vrindavan performing his pastimes, and some great souls do, although I think it is very rare. And one reason why I think it's very rare is that I was just reading today in Krishna Sandarbha. You may recall that when we read the Mangala Charana by Jiva Goswami, he says that these subjects are discussed at length in Krishna Sandarbha. So that's true. So in Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami, in discussing this subject at considerable length, he talks about people, he's talking of course about the circumstances obviously when he was living. He says that even today, some people are perceiving Krishna's pastimes here, his non-manifest pastimes. In Sanskrit, the word is aprakat. So Jiva Goswami says, even today, there are some souls who are able to see Krishna's non-manifest pastimes. But he says there are very few of them. They're very rare. So that was at that time, what to speak of 1998. I suspect there aren't any, really. But it's possible. And here is the system. Here is the system. Here is a system. Yeah. So there are two processes which are actually on two different levels. Number one consists of worship through the channel of mantras. So that is like practice, through the practice of chanting certain mantras. And secondly, through spontaneous love for Krishna. So these are on two different levels. I think it's quite clear. The second level means the perfect level. On the perfect level, pure love of God, then those exalted devotees, externally they may be acting and talking to us and so on and so forth, but on the transcendental platform, they are with Krishna. And seeing and speaking with Krishna and herding the cows with Krishna and so on and so forth, this is a reality for them. So the first part, the mantra, this practice of chanting certain mantras, this is a stage of practice. And it helps one to reach the second stage, which is the perfection of pure love of God and entering into one's eternal relationship with Krishna. Technically, they're called, the first stage is called mantropasana. And the second is called swarasaki. Swarasaki means in terms of one's own rasa. So, then, so there are these two ways of realizing the non-manifest pastimes, coming to see them and enter into them and take part in them, two ways. But one of the ways just leads to the other. And it is really only the other, when one is in the other, the second, the stage of love of God, that one actually enters and actually sees Krishna. So the first stage is a preliminary stage then. Are you with me? Have we bewildered anyone yet? Despite our best efforts, we haven't. Yeah. Sorry? Okay, there are two stages. He says here that the manifestations of the non-manifestive pastimes in regard to the conditioned souls are twofold. One is through chanting mantras. One is through the outpouring of one's natural love for Krishna. So the mantra stage is a stage of practice, and it leads to the second stage. When one perfects that first stage and develops one's pure love of Krishna through chanting the mantras and rendering service like that, then one comes to the second stage where one's natural love for Krishna pours out of the heart, and in that condition one enters one's eternal relationship with Krishna. Is that okay? Yeah. So that's basically the idea in relatively simple terms. Then he goes on at the bottom of page 7 to explain some sort of technical matters in regard to the first part, the chanting of the mantras. And he refers actually to Jiva Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha. So, you have to stay in the proper place. You have to stay in a holy place. And then you meditate on one mantra, which is to do with one mantra.